once again to EWTN's Bookmark. Our guest author joining us from New Jersey is Anthony DeStefano. His latest work is Christmas in Heaven, illustrated by Bernadette Carstensen and published by our friends at Sophia Press. Always great to be with you, Anthony, even if you're not here in person.
Well, thank you so much. Always great to be with you. It's going on something like 22 years or something that I've been on this program.
Absolutely, and still going strong, still writing books, especially a lot of children's books, not exclusively, but a lot of children's books, and a lot of ones having to do with Catholic holidays. It's kind of a holiday season when you join us on the program. This year, another book having to do with Christmas, I guess maybe your fifth or so book that had to do with Christmas, this one entitled Christmas in Heaven.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm always interested in writing books about the true meaning of Christmas. Christmas has obviously been so secularized, almost beyond recognition. The question is how. I've written several children's books, as you mentioned, about the nativity from the perspective of a star of Bethlehem or a grumpy old ox or Joseph's donkey. But this time I wanted to try something different. When I was a kid, you know, I didn't understand why we gave each other presents at Christmas. I never made that connection. And I remember asking my father about that. And the way he explained it was that, you know, Christmas is Jesus's birthday. And since we can't give presents to Jesus because he's in heaven, mm-hmm. the best thing to do is to give them to our friends and family, because that's what makes Jesus happiest. Mm-hmm. And that's a concept that I found very, very easy to understand. All kids understand the concept of birthdays and birthday gifts. The question was how to make that into a story. And so what I've done here is I have this little boy who is sad because his grandmother has died, and it's Christmas time, and he's wondering how she's celebrating Christmas in heaven. And so his grandfather, who's the husband of the woman who has died, sits the boy on his knee and proceeds to paint a very consoling picture of heaven for him. And the big birthday celebration that's going on, because it's Jesus' birthday, all the angels and saints and Our Lady, and of course his grandmother too. So that was the genesis of this particular.
Right. Well, it's great to talk about it, but like we've traditionally done, we're going to go to a clip where you actually present the book for our audience. So let's go to that right now.
Christmas in Heaven by Anthony DeStefano, illustrated by Bernadette Carstensen, read by the author. How do they celebrate Christmas in heaven? The little boy asked, who was no more than seven. His grandma had gone to be with the Lord. He wanted to know if she would be bored up in the clouds so high in the sky, while everyone here just wanted to cry. His grandfather lifted the boy on his knee. He said, "Close your eyes and listen to me. The reason we celebrate Christmas on earth is that it's the day of our dear Savior's birth. In heaven, they're having a giant affair. All of the saints and the angels are there. St. Gabriel's starting the big celebration by blowing his horn in sweet adoration. St. Peter is standing outside heaven's gate, making sure none of the guests have to wait. Inside, St. Martha's been cleaning for hours, while little Therese is handing out flowers. St. Lucy is putting the lights on the tree, making it merry and bright as can be. St. Joseph, who once saved his family from danger, is under the Christmas tree building a manger. St. Nick is unloading the toys from his sleigh for all heaven's children on this happy day. "I can't find a present," the jolly man shouts. St. Anthony rushes to help the saint out. St. Martha stops cleaning and now starts to cook, while Thomas Aquinas sits reading a book. St. Lawrence is turning the roast on a fire, while Joan of Arc helps him to make the flames higher. St. Valentine has chocolate hearts on a tray. St. Martin de Porres helps give them away. Cecilia and Gregory sing a duet. They're joined by two angels to make a quartet. St. Luke is there painting the choir as it sings. St. Mark flies above on a lion with wings. St. Martha starts dusting and sweeping all over. St. Patrick awards her an emerald leaf clover. And there on the table's a huge birthday cake that's taken St. Honoré so long to bake. St. Matthew's been up counting candles all night. There's over 2,000 St. John has to light. All of a sudden, the door opens wide. In walks St. Francis, and there by his side are kittens and puppies and donkeys and sheep. St. Martha is following, trying to sweep. It's hopeless, she says. There's too much to do. St. Jude helps her finish. A miracle come true. Oh, wow, said the boy when Grandpa was done. Heaven's exciting and seems like such fun. But wait, the boy asked, attempting to see. Where is my grandma? Where can she be? Look over there, his grandfather said. The boy saw a girl who was sleeping in bed. But that's not my grandma. My grandma is old. That lady is young. Her hair is all gold. His grandfather answered, You don't understand. No one is old in this glorious land. The people in heaven are all young once more. They're even more lovely than they were before. Just look at your grandma. Look at my wife, the most beautiful person I've known in my life. But wait, it's the Lord, whose birthday's today. He's walking toward grandma. The saints all make way. The Lord looks at grandma. His face is aglow. He speaks the same words that he spoke long ago. Maiden, I tell you, it's time to arise. And look, grandma hears him and opens her eyes. The Lord takes her hand and leads her to where St. Michael is waiting to hold out her chair. She sits down right next to Our Lady the Queen, looking more joyful than I've ever seen. And now all the angels and saints start to sing. Happy birthday to Jesus! Happy birthday, our King! And now Grandma spots us. She's waving, you see? She's blowing some kisses to you and to me. Just then, the boy felt a warm breeze on his cheek. He opened his eyes, excited to speak. Grandma just kissed me. I felt it. It's true. She saw us and smiled and waved at us, too. The grandfather gave the young boy an embrace. He put him down gently and kissed the boy's face. I told you, he whispered, there's no need to fear. Don't be unhappy and don't shed a tear. It's okay that grandma is no longer here. She's spending her Christmas in heaven this year.
So there you have it. Very nicely done. Thank you, Anthony. Of course, do you enjoy doing that?
Enjoy. I don't really enjoy doing any media, even interviews. It's a little bit of a struggle for me. I'm an introvert, and I have to get myself up for all of these things. But it is a very enjoyable thing to put the book to music and to use video to make it sort of seem animated. And I think that overall that has an effect on the viewer that has the potential at least to be more profound. So I do these things because I think it's a way to spread the word, but I don't know if I actually enjoy them.
Right, right. Now, you say in the beginning, note to reader on purgatory in the beginning. Why did you decide to put a note about purgatory? You say the Catholic Church teaches that purgatory is a merciful gift from God, a place where people who have already been saved become perfectly pure so they can be happier with God. Why did you put that in the beginning of a book about heaven?
Well, because I didn't want to give the impression that I don't believe in purgatory. Purgatory is a doctrine of the Catholic Church. It's been a doctrine since the very beginning. It's based on the fact that, as Revelation 21 says, nothing unclean can enter heaven. The fact is there are people who have died who have been saved by Christ but still have on their souls some stain of sin, or they have attachment to sin. Mm-hmm. And purgatory is the place where we get cleansed of those imperfections so that when we see God face to face, we can do so without any shame or guilt or attachment to what's unholy. And the way I explained it in the book is that if you're going to meet the president or the pope, or you're going to go to a wedding or some big party, you would presumably wash your face and comb your hair and maybe change out of your gym clothes. Well, heaven is the biggest party of all time, and we're going to be meeting the most important person, our Lord. So purgatory is the place where we get cleaned up for that.
Right. Well, you say here, we should always pray for our deceased loved ones in case they are in purgatory so that they can get to heaven as quickly as possible. So that's
an important fact. In this book, the grandfather, in an attempt to console his grandson, paints a picture of heaven and hopes that his wife is in heaven. And that's understandable, but at the same time, we never want to deprive those loved ones of the prayers that they may need if they're in purgatory. We've all been to these Catholic funerals where the people speaking, you know, eulogize and canonize the people who have died. And in some ways, that does them a big disservice because we're depriving them of prayers. So while I didn't want to delve into that subject in this book, I wanted to at least mention it to show Catholics out there that I don't believe in just people go straight to heaven, that there is a place called purgatory.
Right, absolutely. What I thought was interesting, too, is how you focus on Jesus is, having this big party in heaven, but who's putting it together? It's the saints. And so you use that as a vehicle to introduce, in many ways, the lives of the saints and some of the specialities of the saints, right?
Exactly. I thought that in addition to being a Christmas story, this book could also serve as an introduction to the saints and the angels. So I tried to include some of the most famous ones, people anyone would recognize, like St. Michael the Archangel and St. Peter and St. Joseph and St. Francis and St. Therese and St. Joan of Arc and naturally Our Lady. And I also included some lesser known saints too, like St. Honoré, the patron saint of baking, because of course we need a birthday cake for a birthday party. So, yes, as you said, I try to portray them doing the things that they're famous for. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because by doing that, we can also paint a little bit of a whimsical, playful picture, because we're talking about a very important subject in this book, grieving about those who have died.
Right.
And I want it to be a happy book because, you know, for Christians, death does not have the final word. The final word is resurrection and life ever after in heaven. So I wanted this to be a happy book, and the way I accomplished that was by painting this playful picture of the saints with, St. Martha cleaning and sweeping as she did in the gospel, and St. Francis of Assisi barreling through the door with a bunch of animals, and St. Martha trying to clean, and St. Jude, the patron saint of hopeless causes.
My favorite. Go to St. Jude right away there. Go. And what I thought was interesting, too, and maybe it struck me, and I only had a chance to read through the book a couple of times, but St. Martha is almost like someone who has a thread throughout the book, isn't she?
She is. She's my comic relief in the book. She's always sweeping. She's always cleaning. She's always cooking. And, of course, she's the one who I just mentioned gets help at the end, after St. Francis comes in with all those animals, St. Jude helps her out. So again, it was a way, by depicting the saints in a playful way, it was a way that we can help bring a smile to children's faces. And then when they deal with those more important, heavier subjects like grief, they can do so in a positive, healthy, Christian way, which is to be with hope.
One of the ones I thought was interesting, too, was Christmas tree building a manger, that St. Joseph would be actually building the manger for under the tree. And the other one, I guess, a little tongue-in-cheek on St. Lawrence, is turning the roast on a fire. Why don't you explain that? I know in the back of the book, you kind of have little paragraphs on each of the lives of the saints and kind of give some of the underlying stories.
I do. I have a little glossary at the end with little thumbnail illustrations and just a little tiny paragraph on each saint, what they're famous for, what they're the patron saint of, and what they're doing in the book. And yes, I did use some tongue-in-cheek humor there. St. Lawrence, of course, was an early Christian martyr, and legend has it that when they were roasting him on a spit over an open fire, he said to those who were killing him, "Turn me over, I'm done on this side." And of course, St. Joan of Arc is there too. She's helping the flames to get higher. Again, this is a way to make adults smile too. Children won't necessarily get that humor, but it's a way to treat this subject so that we can deal in a healthy way with grieving. We don't want the sad feelings that children have to be swept under the rug, where they just lie there and grow and fester and turn into complexes and all kinds of psychological problems. We want them to be able to, fortunately in our Christian religion, we have this beautiful view of heaven and life after death. And so by teaching them this, it's a way to help them grieve in a healthy way.
Right, and I forgot about the fact that St. Jude shows up with the vacuum cleaner there to help out in a hopeless situation like he always does. The other great image you have is when they see the grandmother as being young, and that idea of the youthfulness in heaven. And also it struck me that here's Jesus and how important he is to everything that's going on, but all the saints are surrounding the grandmother in a sense of saying how important each individual is to our Lord.
Yes, and this is a way of introducing children to this beautiful idea of the communion of saints. Mm-hmm. The fact that there's more to life than what we see around us. There's a spiritual, invisible world where the saints and angels are in heaven, praying for us, helping us. They're real. They're different from each other. Someday we're going to be among them, hopefully. And in terms of our own loved ones, we're going to see them someday in the flesh. We believe in this doctrine of the resurrection, so we're not going to be just seeing ghosts in heaven. Someday, if your mother has died, you're going to be able to run up to her and hug her and kiss her and hear her voice and feel the warmth of her skin. So that's a very beautiful doctrine we have, and it's not proclaimed enough.
Right, absolutely. And Bernadette Carstensen, where did you find her?
You know, she's a very well-known Catholic illustrator. I think the National Catholic Register did a whole profile on her a couple of years ago. She's done many church altarpieces and religious paintings, especially of Our Lady and the saints. And I really wanted an artist in this book who loved her faith, but who was able to create a happy book, a bright book, an inspiring book, someone who could create vintage-style illustrations, almost like Norman Rockwell. You know, we wanted this book to be a little playful and whimsical because we want it to be a happy book. Heaven is the happiest place in the world, and we wanted the book to be a happy book. And I think Bernadette was able to not only create poignant and beautiful paintings, but also paintings that had a sense of humor and conveyed the fact that heaven is a fun and happy place.
Right, and you previously had written a book on a different topic of having in a sense of a young child's understanding of death as well, right?
I've written several books on the subject of fear, and one of them was called The Seed That Was Afraid to Be Planted. And in that book, the seed is afraid that a gardener is going to plant him and he's going to be underground. But then what happens, of course, is he becomes a big, beautiful tree overlooking all the mansions of heaven. And I wrote a book called The Travel Guide to Heaven for Kids, which was a children's version of my first adult nonfiction book, The Travel Guide. So I'm always trying to tackle this subject, never afraid to talk about death. Everyone has to deal with the subject of death, including children. They grieve too. They grieve over the loss of their pets, of the loss of their grandparents, sometimes the loss of their siblings and parents. And they experience other kinds of permanent loss as well. And as I just said before, it's very important that we don't sweep those sad feelings under the rug, but we talk about them as Christians.
Very good. So that's Christmas in Heaven. Let's talk in the last couple of minutes, just to remind everybody of the various books that you've written over the year. Now, the first one, if I'm right, that had to do with Christmas was The Little Star, right?
That's right. Little Star is a retelling of the nativity story that focuses on the Star of Bethlehem, the smallest star in the heavens. And this tiny star feels badly that the Holy Family is in a cold stable. So he reaches out and burns as brightly as he can, and in the process actually burns himself out so that the baby Jesus and Mary and Joseph could be warm. So Little Star is really a story about Christ-like sacrificial love, because Little Star gives every bit of himself mm-hmm. for the Holy Family.
Now, has that been your bestseller, or what is your bestseller?
You know, that was a big popular book, but also The Donkey That No One Could Ride was very, very popular about Easter. And also Our Lady's Wardrobe has been very, very popular, obviously, among Catholics.
Sure, absolutely. Then there was the book The Grumpy Old Ox, which you alluded to earlier we were talking about. Tell us a little bit about that particular book.
Well, that book tells the story of a mean-spirited, prideful, grumpy old ox who's lost his sight. He's practically blind. But he happens to be present in the stable in Bethlehem just at the moment when Jesus is born. And he has an insight into the great humility of God, that God empties himself of his glory in order to be born one of us. And this insight is what causes the ox to experience a miracle that affects his sight, both his spiritual sight and his physical sight. In other words, the story is about spiritual pride and how it makes us blind and how you can see again with eyes of faith.
Right. Next up was one called The Beggar and the Bluebird. That one was a little different, wasn't it?
Well, you know, that was kind of a fairy tale about a little bird whose flight south for the winter keeps getting delayed because of the strange requests of a local street beggar. The beggar asks the bird to fly various errands of mercy for him, delivering bread to a homeless man, etc. And as a result of doing these acts of kindness, the bluebird gets caught in a winter snowstorm, and everything seems lost until a surprise ending, you know, reveals that the street beggar is actually an angel of God. So this is a story that shows that great love and self-giving, Christ-like giving, are always rewarded by God, though not in ways that we expect. It's also an introduction to children to the concept of the corporal and spiritual works of mercy.
Okay. And finally, one that was called Joseph's Donkey. Tell us about that.
Yes. I love that book. It was one of my, I think, I'm most proud of that book. It's a story of a donkey purchased by St. Joseph shortly before his marriage to Our Lady. The donkey helps Joseph in his carpentry business, hauling wood and stones, but he also plays a key role in all the major events recorded in the infancy narratives of the Gospel. He carries Mary to Bethlehem. He takes the Holy Family to Egypt to flee from King Herod. He accompanies a 12-year-old Jesus to Jerusalem. The point of the book is to introduce children to St. Joseph. Because the donkey in this story is really a personification of St. Joseph, who, as all Christians know, was a just man and a hard worker and the protector of the Holy Family. So in coming to know the donkey, children will hopefully get to know the foster father of Jesus Christ.
Okay. So let me ask you, you always have stuff in the works. What's your latest book? What can we look forward to coming up soon?
I hope you're going to have me a lot on this year. I've got a book on the Eucharist coming out for children called From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine. I have an adult nonfiction book called The Miracle Book, a simple guide to asking for the impossible. And that's coming out mid-year next year. I've got a book on the true meaning of Halloween, a holiday that also needs to be reclaimed, called All Hallows Eve, coming out next Halloween, not this Halloween. Right. And I've got a book called The Sparrow Who Fell to the Ground. So that's, I think, four or five, counting this book, five books in the next 12, 13 months.
Right. Where do you come up with your ideas?
I don't know. I'm grateful to God. I'm grateful to Our Lady. Many times I'm at Mass or I'm praying the rosary and an idea will just hit me. Maybe it's for a bad reason, because I'm distracted during those times. Mm-hmm. But somehow or other, I've been praying for years that God would not stop giving me ideas. And so far, He's been extraordinarily generous. I'm afraid one day the well will dry up.
Why do you use different artists in your different books?
It all depends, Doug, on the mission of the book. For Our Lady's Wardrobe, the main point of the book was to show children that Our Lady is real. She's alive. She's got a glorified body in heaven. She's not make-believe. And so I wanted to use an artist that was good at photorealism. I didn't want a cartoonish artist. But sometimes when I do books about, say, the sheep that no one could find or the donkey that no one could ride, about animals, I want to use an artist who's the best at putting human expressions on animal characters, because these characters really, even though they're animals, they're really about human beings. So I get a guy named Richard Cowdery, who's like a Disney quality artist who's the best in the world at doing animals. It all depends on what the main goal is of the book.
Mm-hmm. Is it harder for you to write in rhyme or not write in rhyme?
it's easier not to write. It's easier just to write prose. Mm-hmm. But if you can get the rhymes right, and it's hard to rhyme. Some people think it's easy to rhyme. You just come up with the different endings of the word. Mm-hmm. But no, it has to do with the syllables and the accents on the word. And if you do that right, it's almost like adding music to the book. It's almost like giving the, it's like scoring your own story. And so while the words can bring a person to feel emotions, the rhyming is like music. It actually could make you cry bittersweet tears. So anytime I can use rhymes, I do. Also, rhyming is much more memorable if they're done well.
I was going to say, have you found from parents who say they enjoy it because it works well with reading the book to their children?
I think so, yes. And many people have told me that, you know, with all of these books combined, mm-hmm. it's almost like I'm creating a rhyming catechism. Mm-hmm. And I never set out to do that at the beginning. But now, 21 years later, it seems like that's where it's going. And that's why I wanted to write a book, say, on the Eucharist. I'm trying to hit these areas that I have hit in the past.
You never know what's coming out. Maybe we've got a rhyming catechism in the future of Anthony DiStefano. Thank you so much, Anthony. Christmas in Heaven is the book available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. Check it out, especially if you're looking for something for Christmas this year and for grandkids especially. I'm Doug Keck. This has been Bookmark. We shall see you next time. Thanks.